Jake,
Yeah.
you see in front of you
Oh,
a
shit.
pedestal. You've gone through multiple rooms of this dungeon, fought multiple enemies, goblins, bodies lay behind you, and in front of you is a marbled pedestal. And on it
It's
is a
beautiful.
plaque. It is beautiful, it's quite ornate. And the plaque reads, "A bubbling golden ichor will satisfy the gods. Only one made from the root of a tree." Jake, please crack your root beer. It's time to record a new episode.
I don't have a root beer today.
You don't have one today. The last two, when I made fun of you for having one, you had one. You don't have one
You
today.
made fun of me.
The one time I count on you, the
No.
intro is dependent on you having your root beer ready at the beginning of
No,
this as of the episode. I almost
I'm
call it the
not even
beginning of the
blonde.
session. It is kind of a session,
If
I
you want to think
suppose.
about it that way, that's totally fine by me.
I guess that's just my D&D brain.
If it locks you in, that's all I give a shit about.
I'm always locked in, man. Speaking of locked in, I have a question for you, Jake.
Okay.
This
See how this
comes
goes.
from Reasonable Sun 9426.
Thank
Not
you.
like an overzealous sun, not like a tiny, just a reasonable sun.
I like
S-U-N.
a reasonable sun. Wait, is it sun like star or sun like
Sun like star,
child?
S-U-N.
Oh,
So,
that's nice.
just a reasonable one. Reasonable Sun asks, "How do you prevent players from making suggestions to another player when their characters aren't present? During my campaign, it was becoming commonplace for one or more players to chime in with suggestions as how another player's character in another location should proceed. It was driving me mad. Finally, at the start of a session, I explained my feelings that it felt I felt it detracted from a player's role playing and also my issues with every decision being made by committee. I asked them to let the characters who were present deal with the situation. That very session, the same circumstance reoccurred. After someone jumped in to tell the acting player what they should do, I said, 'That's no longer an option. Yeah, it's draconian, meta, and breaks the fourth wall, but so did telepathic suggestions coming from other party members. Despite the cons, the pro is that it was only a couple sessions before unsolicited suggestions stopped, and it was the players who shut it down. A player would start to open their mouth to recommend something when their character wasn't present, and several other players would jump in to prevent it. Though this has met with some
Hell
success,
yeah.
I feel my solution is heavy-handed and would like to hear how other GMs handle similar situations." I think I have an interesting thought on this, but I want to hear your initial reaction to it.
I think that's pretty rad that the GM had said, "Hey, I don't like it when you guys do this," and then the players adopted it like relatively quickly.
It's good, yeah, if nothing else, great communication with this DM
Yeah.
and their players.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So how do you feel about players talking to another player when their characters aren't present? That kind of.
We do that. I mean, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
Sometimes we will be like, if something funny comes up, we'll be like, "Oh my God, you should do this funny thing." And then
Right.
that's, I mean, that's, but we're not like, pff, we're just saying it as like, "Oh, this could be funny," or, "This could be cool." But I mean, at the end of the day, it's up to the player. Once they start like discussing it, I think that's probably like a little much.
Yeah.
But if it's just like a, "Oh, this could be funny," or a, "Oh, this could be cool," like, that's fine. I don't see
I do
that
like
doesn't hurt my
that.
feelings.
And I do think, yeah, I do like chiming in with like this could be funny or like things like that, just to make the, anything if you're trying to make the game more enjoyable, like it's not a bad idea.
Get a laugh or two out.
Yeah. And I think that there is a level where it's metagaming, like you said, like to probably a not very fun level where, like you said, if it becomes like this whole discussion, it's like I might at that point, like if you feel like people all start kind of chiming in, I might focus in on the player that is in that situation to say, "Hey, these guys aren't here. Like, what do you do?" And I think at that point,
Yeah.
that's a pretty clear indicator for the other players to kind of back out a little bit.
Yeah, I think if it's a solo thing, like if you're focused on one player and like everybody starts chiming in, like as the player, I might be like a little annoyed.
Oh, sure. If everybody's trying to
tell
you,
but if there's like more than one person, then throw the. I mean, everybody can throw their suggestion out.
Yeah, I also feel like, especially in like 5th edition Dungeons and Dragons, but maybe a lot of games. I mean, this could apply to a lot of games. There's a lot of rules. Everybody's characters does a lot of things. And so, like, I think, like, throwing out a reminder to somebody that, like, they might have an ability or a spell. I don't think is bad. Like, I think, especially if it's, like, a newer player, or, like, one of the lesser experienced people in the group, like, throwing out, like, hey, remember you have, you know, Charm Person or something. Like, I think that, although maybe some people might find that metagaming, I think that that's just being, like, a, you know, like thoughtful, you know, fellow player, like you're, you know, because they do have access to it, and their character, that's the thing, is their character would know that, their character would know all the spells and options they have, but reminding the player who might have forgotten, I think is fine.
I like that a lot, actually. I forget things that I have sometimes in. Like, when I was playing my last Ranger, I forgot that I had Savage Attacker, like, at least half of the time. So, and then I roll a 1 on my hit die and not re-roll it for...
Yeah, somebody else...
forgot. But if someone else was like, oh, you have Savage Attacker, remember that. And
it's like, oh, yeah, thanks. Oh, fuck,
thanks.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, and I think anything that your characters know...
It'll help the player also remember that they have that.
Right,
later,
like, yeah, like
because it'll build up. It's not just them. Like, there's all the different ways of learning, and some people can learn just fine by reading something and putting it to memory, and some people need auditory or another visual type of learning style, and then that helps them remember it. So I like things like that. I would never ask a player to be like, hey, don't tell that guy that he has this ability.
Yeah, I think anything that their character would know is like fine to throw out there. Like, even as the DM, you know, as you know, you should be fairly familiar with like what capabilities the characters have and be able to remind them, like, hey, like you do have this ability, like that could help you out here.
You should probably have a decent knowledge of what's on everyone's player sheets.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's always a good rule. Also, just so that you're not, like, completely blindsided by something, like, you know, you should know, like, you know, session 1 or session 0, when people make characters, if somebody rolls a class that maybe you're not as familiar with, maybe you haven't played one, or you're going to get to a higher level than you've had with that class before, like, you should definitely take some time in your prep to read through that class, make sure you, you know, kind of know what kind of things they could be throwing at you, because...
That absolutely does not mean that they still won't pull things out of their ass that you didn't even think
definitely.
Of.
Definitely. Or they'll use an ability in a way that you never even thought of. But it is good to have a general idea of what things they could be throwing at you, for sure.
Yeah, that's why TTRPGs are better than writing a book.
Right. Yeah, it's like that. Being surprised by the players is always very fun. Sometimes... not frustrating. Sometimes it is very surprising. It really catches you off guard, and you're like, oh, like, how am I going to make this
like,
all
oh,
work?
That's completely ruined what I just was thinking of.
But that's a good DM skill to build up is being thrown off and being able to recover and make it all play out.
Yeah. Always have a backup plan.
Yeah, for sure. And if you ever give your players choices... or even like a perceived choice, like you have to be ready for, you know, whatever they choose. I saw a story recently about, you know, how someone had their like BBG approach the party and offer them like great power, you know, in trade for like their servitude. And like, you know, this guy thought that his players would never just like bend the knee to the BBG and work for him. And then they did. And then they're like, yes, we accept. And he had no plan. He had no plan for like, how this was going to go. He just thought it would be a cool moment where they deny, you know, we will never.
He thought it'd be funny.
We will never turn to the dark side. And then they were like, yeah, we do. And so
they're like,
he,
fuck, the dark side's so cool.
Yeah, so he went to Reddit screaming for help because he had no idea what to do.
That's so funny.
everybody's like, yeah, if you're going to lay a choice out there, like, you need to at least be somewhat ready for either option, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, because you never know when they're going to be like, I'm going to go rob that bank.
Yeah.
With you. Yeah. You offered me to rob the bank. I'm going to go rob the bank. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess what happens now? I don't know.
Yeah, I guess we're going to fucking find out.
Yeah, I guess we're going to find. We're going to learn together.
Yeah, literally.
Type in ChatGPT, bank heist.
Wait, hold on. He's on to something.
I do want to say, do never feel bad about using ChatGPT. I've pulled a couple of puzzles out of ChatGPT before.
Yeah, I think everybody has their different thoughts on like AI and stuff. I think it can be a useful tool, like for things like that.
I think it's
good. In moderation. Like, I don't think anybody wants like an AI generated campaign. Like, I think you need some personality, some of your own flair in there. But especially for like kind of random, like spur of the moment things. Like, if you know they kind of walk into a room and you realize it would be cool to have a puzzle or a riddle or something like that. Like typing in, you know, to ChatGPT saying like, oh, you know, write me a Dungeons & Dragons themed riddle about shadows or death or like whatever maybe kind of theming mm-hmm. your dungeon has, can be like a real lifesaver to come up with like something cool like that on the spot. If they're in an area you didn't plan riddle, for or something.
Your ass is not coming up with a riddle on the spot. I'm sorry.
It would be tough.
It would be really hard. So, and you know, in scenarios where you're sitting there and there's like, oh, you can just run through this dungeon and attack things, but then adding a riddle at the end of it, it's like, oh, we can't beat up this riddle. Now we have to think.
Yeah, create some, kind of a different challenge, a more creative challenge. And like, it's not, you know, your players will probably blow through it. They might figure it out or like have some tool to, you know, get around it, but it's just a different kind of encounter that might be fun. Mm-hmm. And it's an easy way to grab one really quickly if you don't have time to prep, because riddles and puzzles and stuff like those take a lot of prep usually. To find one online that works and integrate it into your game or come up with your own even, like, is very challenging. So
yeah,
it's a good resource.
Yeah. Back to the main topic at hand.
Yeah.
I personally do not see an issue with players talking at the table, as long as it's like within reason. If they start like debating when no one is a part of the situation on what one player will do, and the one player is not like having full control of their character at the moment, like that, I can see how that would be you'd want to put a stop to that pretty fast.
Yeah, and it'll be everybody's personal preference, like what level of metagaming they allow. Because, I mean, everybody has metagaming to some degree. I mean, if you are not like fully method acting your character the entire session, then you have some level of metagame. Like,
yeah.
And so everybody just has a different tolerance for, like, I think how much or what they'll allow. And I think finding that for your group is really important. And so like, yeah, as a GM, like if something's bothering you, like, you know, feel free to let them know, like this guy did, like just talk to him. Like, I just think that it, you know, takes away from the game, takes away from the immersion. Like, I think it'd be more fun if, you know, we didn't metagame in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, like people want to have fun and they want to perform well. People, you know, that is part of the fun for them, is performing well and being able to work together collaboratively to find a fun or cool solution to something, even if, you know, it's a little metagamey, I think is fine. But just set those boundaries as a DM and don't be afraid to at any point be like, hey guys, this feels like a little much. Like, you know, this character is in this, dangerous situation and I want to hear from them. Like, what do you do? That's totally fine.
Yeah. I'm definitely of the opinion that if a player is alone in a scene, leave that player be alone in the scene. If there's two or more players, then let them table talk as much as they want to.
Yeah, especially if it's like a scene that has some like emotional weight to it. Like if they're just talking to a shopkeep and somebody's like, "Oh, can you buy me a health potion also? Like I forgot." Like I don't know. For me as a DM, like I don't care. That's fine. That doesn't bother me at all. If you don't like that and you're like, "Oh no, you should have discussed that beforehand," then you know, more power to you. But I have no problem.
You're a little crunchier than
yeah, it's a little intense for me. But like that doesn't bother me. But if they're like in like a role play situation where they're like speaking to their god or deity or you know or a important character in their backstory, and you like chime in with something, like you know, let them have their moment. You know, it's a collaborative storytelling game. It is your responsibility as a dungeon master to spread the spotlight and make sure that everyone has their moments. And it's your responsibility as a player to let those other players have their moments. When the spotlight shines on them, you know, you need to let them have that time. And if for some reason as a player you feel like your GM isn't highlighting someone as much, try to lift them up. Try to give them a situation where they can do something cool or you ask something of their character. You know, try to uplift each other and give everybody time to feel cool and you know, that's our plan.
Yeah, I will say as a player, I've probably done this sin before. I've probably spoke up on someone's thing when I shouldn't have.
Yeah, it's hard not to.
It's hard not to sometimes. Yeah, you think, oh, if you're doing something funny, like, oh, this could be funny, or like I always it get a little awkward when we start getting like intense emotional stuff, so then I might like crack a joke or something. Usually I try to do that only to when I'm in those situations. It's good to not when people are in that, and I have recognized that a few times where I'm like I should not talk in some scenarios.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, that's understandable. All right. I think that was a solid... Right.
We touched it a little bit here, but... hold on. Pause. Kasudo Gaming asks, "I'm drawing blanks on creating puzzles in my game. Any suggestions?"
Wow.
"So as the title says, I'm having trouble crafting puzzles for my players that fit with the NPC creating them. I really want to have satisfying puzzles as the NPC who's making them for the party, like jokes and tricks on others. I need at least 3 puzzles so far. I only have one that I really like. It's a small puzzle," and he goes on to describe it. "Any advice or suggestions y'all can give would be greatly appreciated. Thank you."
Interesting. So we did touch on a way to come up with some quick puzzles or riddles, but it sounds like this guy is maybe interested in something.
He has got some time.
Yeah, he's got some time. He wants something a little bit more fleshed out. What were you thinking?
I can describe the puzzle that he has, if that would...
Yeah, what does he have so far?
Okay, so this puzzle has a small trinket at the center of a circular structure. If the player attempts to walk towards it, they must make a wisdom save. If they fail, they cannot resist the urge to turn around, and once they do, they see nothing. Once they turn back, however, they are seemingly reset back to where they started walking. The way to complete the puzzle is to walk backwards towards the center, and once there, they can obtain the small trinket.
That's a good little puzzle. I like that.
That's a fun one.
Not like a crazy difficult solution, but something that might stump the players for, you know, a little bit of time, a little couple moments. Did you have any ideas? What attracted you to this post?
I think it's something that all GMs struggle with at times.
Sure.
So I will use online resources, whether like searching through Reddits, or I have done a ChatGPT prompt before to see what it comes up with. And usually, like, what I find, I'm not 100% like, this is what I should do, or ChatGPT doesn't give me a very good answer. But what it does do is it gives me some ideas, so that way I can, this guy did this little mechanic right here. I think that's really fun. Maybe I can incorporate it this way.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that. For specific examples, oh man.
let's make a puzzle for them.
Sure.
Okay.
I had one in a. I've done a couple of different things. I love just like a riddle, but I had one puzzle in a dungeon that was like tiles on the floor in like
Oh, yeah.
a
I remember
maybe
this
10
one.
by 10 grid or something that covered like the entirety of the floor. And on the other side of the room where the tiles stopped, there was like a man chained up to like a kind of X shape of like wooden beams. And then as they started to step on the tiles, those chains tightened and tightened until they were like pulling at this guy. And the solution was that you could only step on the tiles that formed like the perfect X across the square tiles on the floor. The kind of hint was that like the wooden beams were in the X shape. And you guys, I don't remember you struggling
We
with
didn't
that for
figure it out.
two. You
I
didn't?
don't know. We did not
Oh,
figure it out that it was the X.
you got around it some other way though.
Yeah.
I think somebody like wild shaped into a bird and flew
Yeah,
across.
someone. Yeah, that did happen.
So yeah, which yeah, it stumped him for a moment. They had to come up with a different solution to get across the room, which they did. And so like that's the point, right? Like it doesn't matter if they figure out like the answer. Like you know, they might come up with something creative to get around your puzzle, and that's fine because it served its purpose, right? They had to it stopped them, made them think creatively to get around this problem that you've put there, and then you move on. Like they don't, you know, you don't need to force them to come up with this super specific answer, which I think is good advice for all puzzles and riddles and stuff. I also had one where like as they were moving through this like haunted forest, ghosts would appear to them and like ask them riddles. If they got the riddles right, then the ghost would like allow them to pass and keep moving. If they got the riddles wrong, then the ghost would attack them and they'd have a little combat with like a it was like a banshee or a ghost stat block or whatever. And so, you know, not like anything crazy damning for the players if they get it wrong, but if they get it right, feels good. They get to move on without having a combat.
I have always wanted to do the good old-fashioned one of us tells only truths and one of us tells only lies,
Oh
except
yeah.
both of them just tell lies.
A little twist on an old classic.
I have not found a good way to insert it, but I think it'd be so much funnier for like to just sit there and have both of them just lie their asses off to you. And then eventually just someone might be like, "You're both fucking lying," and then the door just like flies open or something.
That's pretty funny. That'd be good. Yeah, like one of
I've
them,
not found
they're both
I've
telling you solutions on how you'd open the door. Like one of them says like, "Oh, you must cast a magic spell for the door to open." And the other one's like, "No, you must use a great feat of strength to open the door." And then they try casting a spell, and then they try pushing on the door with their
Yeah,
strong
and none of it
character.
works.
Neither of it works. Like, yeah, until someone realizes that they're both lying, it won't open. And as soon as somebody realizes that it opens, that's fun. That is
Yeah.
very that's very funny.
I've
I
tried
like
it for
that.
like I've had that on the back burner for years. I've never used it. And I was
That's
like
good.
I figured I just might as well just whip it out right now. I just feel like I'm just gonna
Yeah.
reveal my longest standing secret.
If you're out listening to this, I would love to hear in the comments some riddles or puzzles you've used to stump your players before. That's very interesting to me. I like that.
Yeah, riddles are always fun. You know, like if yeah, thematic riddle is cool. Riddles are, you'd be surprised how, and this is coming from a player, how intelligent you might think you are in your day-to-day life, and then when someone presents you with a riddle when you're surrounded by your friends playing D&D, how stupid you actually are.
You definitely can feel that way. And I love riddles, and I
I've
think I'm pretty good
seen.
at riddles. I will say though that sometimes in D&D campaigns specifically, it is tough if you present a riddle. If your players take some time to get it and then one of them finally comes up with the answer and they're all like, "Oh," like then that is when it's satisfying and fun. But I have had times where like it does get to the point where it's like dragging on for too long and people are like frustrated because nobody's coming up with the answer and like you have to then try to give hints and then like eventually you might even give them the answer. Like it's not it can land in a really unsatisfying way if you're not careful.
Yeah. I've I've seen some things where it's like, where it's basically a meme where it's like, if you're preparing as a dungeon master, just remember, as soon as your players sit down at the table, they lose 15 IQ points.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. So yeah, I would have a little bit more caution with like riddles and stuff like that. Like have like maybe a couple acceptable answers. And then also maybe have a plan for a couple solid hints, if you feel like they're struggling, so you can get through it a little quicker.
Yeah, I've done a bad puzzle where I did it was like you got handed a note, and the note had essentially what would point you to where it was, and I stubbornly didn't move it after you guys went somewhere.
I'm curious, actually. I want to ask about that because I don't know if I ever got the full story of how that happened.
I have my OneNote, so I might be able to just...
Yeah, I remember we got a note, and the note led us to, like, a telescope in an observatory. Uh-huh. And...
Well, you guys didn't go there first.
No, we did. I remember this. We went to the telescope, and it was pointed at, like, a tree thing. Mm-hmm. But then there was also... Part of the note, I think it wasn't a note, it was like a message stone. You played it out loud for us.
Yeah.
Part of the thing was that it was like, I don't remember the name, but the name of the tree was also very close to the name of the tavern. And like
because it was broken speech.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it was like this kind of choppy message. It was hard to hear, intentionally so by you. And so because those names were so close, we weren't sure if it was the tree or the tavern. But then we went to the telescope because it also led us there, mm-hmm. and it was pointed at like the tree. So we went to the tree and like tried a bunch of stuff there and couldn't quite get the answer. Then we went to the tavern and tried a bunch of stuff there and we couldn't figure it out. And then to the telescope.
I do have the notes still, so okay. I can read out what it was meant to be.
Yeah, and this is just my memory of it. And then we went back to the telescope for the second time, and like then you like had us roll a perception check, and we noticed some like tinge to the telescope, and we like opened it up, and there was like a sending stone in there with the answer or something.
Yeah, that was me like. Being like, I don't know what else to do.
Yeah. So how is that supposed to go?
Okay. So it said, it was 11 O'Kill and then cut out. So it'd be Avern, and then 2 days. So it said 11 O'Kill, Avern, 2 days. So you don't get the full message.
Right.
And the full message was meet at 11 in Oak Tree Hill Cavern in 2 days. See you around. Which is what I believe that note ended up saying. But I had on my map, I had the Oak Hill Tavern and I had the Oak Hill Cavern, and I purposely put the tavern there so that way you guys would, you basically use it like as a red herring.
Yeah.
And then,
But we then, also, like, something about, like, the 2 days we didn't get. So then when we, like, tried to immediately go there and, like, couldn't figure anything out, we were really confused.
Nothing was there. And then, And then that's when I was like, okay. And then you guys finally gave up. And then I was like, okay, here's the notes. Because you're let's go back to the observatory. Maybe we missed something.
Yeah, I remember being frustrated because... You know, as the player, a lot of times you assume everything the DM does is intentional. And so when we went back to the telescope and got a perception check to realize that something was off about the telescope and figured out to open it and there was something inside, I felt slighted because we didn't get that perception check the first time we looked at the telescope, which obviously because that wasn't supposed to be there. That wasn't your plan for it to be there. But you had to make an adjustment on the fly because... That puzzle was going on too long and we weren't figuring it out and we were probably a little frustrated with it. And so I remember being frustrated about that because I'm like, why didn't we get the perception check the first time? Keep that in mind is like your players will assume the things you're doing are intentional. And so if you try to kind of, you know, quickly give them an answer somehow with something they've already interacted with or whatever, like they'll be confused on why that didn't happen the first time or... I think, just in general, keep that in mind that, like, your players will think that you have this whole thing really planned out, So be careful about how you do decide to reveal that information if and things guys, are not you guys going wait, well.
In my notes here, you guys wait in the cavern too, but the thing is that you like did it that night and then it said in 2 days.
Yeah.
So then I was like So then you're like running after something that wasn't there, and I tried hard. This was like my second time running D&D, so
yeah.
I have roadblocks, a couple of roadblocks. But yeah, definitely be ready to change something if you're having a puzzle. Be ready to change it on the fly if they're getting frustrated. That's something that I neglected doing because
I don't remember if
it was like me just being frustrated that you guys aren't getting it or just really trying to like really sitting there like, okay, they're just not understanding this one part. And I tried to be like, because I remember you guys went into the tavern and I was like, oh, I've not seen any odd people around recently.
Right. Yeah. Like in that scenario, maybe like the bartender could have said, I did see some shady people come in here. I think they're planning on meeting here again in 2 days. Is what I overheard. And then it's like, okay, so if you feel like your players need some help, always try to find a way to give them the information they need in a different way, because maybe they've missed how they were originally supposed to get the information, right?
Yeah.
So be willing and ready to move clues around or have clues come up in a different way to get them to the answer. Because if they haven't found the clue yet and it comes up in wherever they go looking for it, it'll feel like that's what they're supposed to do, and it will still be satisfying. For that specific scenario, I think that would have worked. That
session started off so good, too.
That
was the one where like the assassins broke into your room, and then you had like the cool fight, and that was when the one guy that was playing the tree was still there.
He's playing like an int, like treant kind of character. So I would say any mysteries or puzzles, be willing to move those clues around and have them come up as naturally as you can in other places if the players miss them, and you should be on a pretty good track. Or I think a good rule is like have your mystery and then have like three clues that could like give them the answer to the mystery, but they only need one of them. So like you have three potential options of like, oh, this could give them the answer, this could give them the answer, or this could give them the answer. And then they only have to find one. If for some reason they're still confused, they could go looking and maybe find a second one that will, you know, like bring everything together. But yeah, have three different clues that can give them the answer, and that they only have to find the one, so that kind of any path they go down, they can figure it out.
I definitely was a little put myself in over my head in that one because it was. It was my first homebrew D&D campaign. So I try to go big, and then I think I went a little too big because I've got like, look at this thing. I've got charts and I've got like lists of clues and stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is a little much.
For a puzzle.
I'll have to show you this later. It's a little wild.
I take very minimal notes because I like to leave myself a lot of freedom to adapt because, you know, sometimes you think a story might present itself one way and then a player makes a choice that then suddenly you're like, oh, it would actually be really cool to present it in this way now because they have this connection to this other NPC or something. So I like to leave my stuff pretty open. My notes can be pretty definitely minimal. I would describe them as bare bones at times, but I think for my style of GMing, it works because I'm very comfortable running things on the fly and improvising. Some people aren't, and so your notes might need to be quite a bit more detailed, and so you'll have to find that balance. I think we've kind of talked about that before. But
I've got, like, looking at my notes from, like, the last thing I run, the Dungeon World thing, from session 1 to session 7, I started with, like, a page and a half of notes, and then I ended with like 9 bullet points.
I'm a big bullet points guy. I love, like, I remember we had a one shot once where to my own fault, I had not prepped for this one shot at all. Like, I think I had a really busy week, and Saturday snuck up on me, and it was the day of, and it's like 10:30, you guys are coming over at like 11, and I'm like just blank page of a journal, just hoping something strikes me. And I think I wrote down like 3 bullet points. Like, I was like, Italian mafia, anarchist rebel group, and like, I think I had like one other thing. Like,
I'm trying to remember this one.
And it was the like initial superhero one shot we did, like the first thing.
Yes, which that is, one. Okay,
which
that
famously is one of our
so much fun.
Yeah, this is famously one of our best sessions of like a tabletop RPG we've played. And I literally went into it with 3 bullet points.
Dude, when we started like the fighting the monster in it, the one guy like kills him and he's like, not so big. Fuck.
Yeah, we had a player who like wanted to drop like this really cool one-liner, and he just like fumbled and choked and stuttered, and it was so funny. He was like, not so tough when you fuck. And it was like, so it worked so well with his character, who's kind of like a more shy, awkward, you know, and then he tries to drop this one-liner and just bombs, and it was so funny.
Dude, yeah. Our campaigns are like pinnacle of enjoyment for me, but some of our one shots have been so fucking legendary. It's incredible.
Yeah, I just remember it so fondly, and it's so crazy to me that I literally went into that with like 3 bullet points and just and a dream, man.
Yeah,
like
you've never told me that before. That's the first time I've ever
thought. I'm ashamed I had nothing prepared.
Well, you, like, we were gonna start playing Mask
at the very minimal prep I do for most campaigns.
I remember we were going to start playing Masks, but you're like, guys, we can't do Masks this week, so I didn't get a chance to read the book.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh, that's fine. Can we do like a one shot or something? And then you were just not wanting to disappoint anyone, just went, yes.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah. And so like, I think
that was on Thursday or something.
Yeah. And like, I just used like the moves that are available in Masks, like the actions, like how you fight or investigate things or move around. Like I used the player moves to like tell you guys what roles to make, but we didn't like have proper character sheets. You kind of just vaguely described.
No, we really didn't have character sheets because
you didn't have sheets. Yeah, you just described.
Yeah, you're like, the way it works is that if you take too many hits, you're like damaged, you're all like on the edge or something, and then narratively if you get like a really big hit again, like you die or whatever, you're out of the fight. And they were like, oh yeah. Fuck yeah, that's cool, that means we don't have to keep track of anything on a paper.
Well, that is true with Masks, that the damage in that game just works as like, you every time you, it's called like take a big hit or something, and you just roll, and depending on how you roll, like any one take a big hit move could be the end.
Cool. Masks is a really cool system. There's just like a lot of it's really good if you want to play season one of Invincible, the TTRPG, because
yeah,
it's
teenage
high school
superheroes, high school-y. Yeah. If that's what you're looking for, definitely check out Masks: A New Generation. It's a Powered by the Apocalypse system, and it's fantastic for that. Right, we're actually playing a superhero campaign right now as well, which. This is our second one that we've done after that one. And we're not using Masks because I wanted to age it up a little bit. I wanted more of like an adult grittier story. So we're not using that. But that is a very incredible system if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah. And so far, this one's pretty good because you're using the, what is it called?
Called Never Stop Blowing Up.
Never Stop Blowing Up.
I've Frankenstein some things together, but that's the basis of our system, is the Never Stop Blowing Up system, system that was written by the Dimension 20 team that they use for action heroes. And I'm like, I think that superheroes.
Oh,
would
really?
Use
they
these things.
I didn't know that was a D20 thing.
Yeah, yeah. They have a show of Never Stop Blowing Up where it's like literally built for like playing, you know, Vin Diesel and The Rock and, you know, James Bond, like action heroes doing crazy action hero stuff. But I altered it and stuff to fit some superhero stuff. So
yeah, so because of that, you don't roll too often.
As the GM, I don't roll. No,
no, as no, but as a player, like we only, well, I mean, within the like combats, like was like 90% of our rolls.
Yeah, there's like there. Yeah, it's a more, it's a much more narrative system,
which yeah, I enjoy. I would rather just be like, I want to do this, and then you take that as it is, and then
right.
And then yeah, and then we have a good time.
Yeah, it's definitely built around, you know, if you're working with like people who are these like action heroes or superheroes or whatever, it's like, you know, they're going to be able to do most things. Like they're pretty powerful in their own right. So mm-hmm. It takes quite a bit, you know, to make them roll to see like, oh, is this possible? Like, so yeah, it's interesting. It's fun so far. We'll have to see how it goes, but
yeah.
All right.
I think that's a pretty good place to stop.
Yeah, I think we got some good stories, some good advice in there. We've been the Gelatinous Dudes. My name is Keegan. This is my best buddy, Jake. Please, please leave a comment or email us. We have our email description, northwoodpod@gmail.com, I believe. Send us any questions, stories you might, or, you know, advice that you might need. Or just, yeah, any funny tabletop RPG stories or comments about the episode. We'd love to hear from you guys. Check out our other show, The Northwood Project. It's more of a horror anthology, fully scripted audio drama. If you like that style of podcast, you'll really love it. But yeah, I think with that, we've been the Gelatinous Dudes, and we will see you next week.
Bye! Bye.